Blog Talk Radio.
And everybody should know that's how love goes. It's good for the soul.
Oh, I've got a long way to go, but it won't stop the pain. No, no. That's the kind of thing that keeps me coming back again and again.
Till I see your face.
Looking at like a blank screen. Come on in until I get straight, because clearly I can't see myself over here. Yeah. Okay, let's refresh. Don't do that. Don't do. Anyway. Yeah, I don't see. Anyway, okay. Hopefully I'm okay over here.
Yeah, you are. You are.
How are you? You. That's okay.
Now,
let me tell you something. First of all, you know, I do outpatient treatment.
Okay.
And on this, you know, hand sanitizer, Lysol spray, just every time somebody move, come in and out, you get to, you know, sanitize. I think I have some inhaling issues at this point. I don't know about anybody else, but, you know, I was feeling kind of woozy for a moment there in the office because I had to. And, you know, I was trying to do right, making people, you know, wash their hands, hand sanitizer, spray all the chairs. And I was like, self, you know, you feeling some type of way right now. What's going on? And, you know, obviously I went out to get some fresh air. But, you know, be careful out there, great people. If you're in an enclosed space, no. Watch out for the inhalants. And feel a little high there. Especially if you're doing the Lysol, which now I'm doing the Lysol, the Pine Sol, concentrated. I was just trying to help the people, right? Because, you know, I had to make sure nobody walk out of here saying, you know, Healthy Soul Talk did not disinfect where they were, okay? So, yes. That was happening for a couple of days. Then I got out of the office, and I was okay until tomorrow. Okay, we're just gonna keep going. All right. So yeah. I was definitely feeling some type of way, and clearly I had, you know, some clients calling me in. You know, taking that precaution. You know, they say they were feeling sick. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But no joke. I'm praying for people who, including myself, who are losing contracts. Yeah, postponed or what do they say? Postponed or do public speaking workshops, teach mass amounts of people. Yeah, it's over, right? So if I ever need a roll of tissue, all of you all out there who hoarded the stores, Dr. Thomas was not in that. And so if it gets to mid-April and I say that I need some tissue, I want to see how many people come to my aid. And I'm serious with that. I'm not going back out to the stores because that's a, you know, pointless thing to do. So those of you know who you are, that racked up on toilet tissue, leaving none to nobody else, right? I hope you and then don't come to me talking about some, yeah, you know, here's the price for some tissue. I expect it to be free. That's the godly thing to do. Am I my brother's keeper? This is the test of time for that. Am I my brother? When the toilet tissue gets low, they were out of Gatorade. What was I looking? I was looking for Gatorade, toilet tissue, paper towels. What else? The me sections were gone. You know, that's what I don't understand either. How do you have a deep freezer at home? Okay. I was wondering about, like, how are you buying up? Excuse me, because both my producers are in the studio, and I'm excited. And one is telling on the other that they, you know, you got deep freeze? How you up? Really? I understand for the freezer and, you know, the but how are we selling out of meat in stores? And how are you hoarding meat? Right? I understand you can put the tissue in the basement, the garage, you know, closets. But where are you storing all of this meat? You can't have more than 10 people in your house. Fuck you. Public places are extended beyond your front yard. You know we be in the alleys and right. So I know it seems odd right now. That's okay though. Hold on, let me check my phone here until we get I'm going to go to my page because clearly, right, I'm winging it right now. I'm not starting. You know, I have to, you know, I don't like change like this. And so it has to be in order. Okay. So there we have it. So you hurry up. So you get back in place and we can get back to our listeners. Yes, obviously, back to, you know, praying for those who, like I say, includes myself, who, we know when you get an email that says postponed or canceled and it wipes out your whole month, that's a serious emotional reaction, right? And so that was three main contracts that we have that because it involves large groups of people, it's been canceled and postponed indefinitely, right? And so, you know, that's huge. But I know God is a provider. And there are plenty of other times that he's made a way. So I encourage you, from one person to another, this too shall pass. Right? But all I got to say is, those of you who are hoarding meat and tissue, too shall pass. So open up your doors, right? If I get a hand. Got it? All right. Thank you all for tuning in. You're tuning in live to the Healthy Soul Talk Show with your girl, your favorite therapist, Dr. Kimberly Thomas. Welcome on the Blog Talk side. Obviously, I will fire off that number for you to call in, but my producer has posted, which I'm going to trust that he's going to do, so you can go ahead to get connected. You know how we do it every week. I need some type of support when I come in because I'm always on the go. And so he grounds me and you know, he has me. So we having some technical difficulties right now, which he can't. Listen, now you try to just put me out there just because they can't hear you. Right now, but that's okay.
You see yourself on your phone?
No. Watch. You're not even over there. Anyway, so I'm just going to keep talking to the great people, and hopefully I get to see some comments real soon. So those of you in, good evening. Right now, but obviously I thank you for tuning in. If you can go ahead and share this video, those of you on Blog Talk, you know, grab somebody, because we're going to talk about you know, things you need not to say to people experiencing mental health issues and illnesses, which probably is about all of us at this point. But yes, we're going to get into that. Now listen, the kids are out of school, right? And you know, I appreciate teachers. You educators, I have such a deep appreciation for you all. So when things like this happens, my heart hurts. Because, you know, reality kicks in that some of us will experience what you all experience on a day-to-day basis. They're not bad. They are... selectively not good. Okay. So, you know, my little one needs the child care. And not only is the school closed, but, you know, the daycare, the center is closed. So that absolutely puts us outdoors for trying to figure out, you know, who's going to care for her. And so, you know, she's the ride over to the house this morning was quite interesting. You know, so I figured I'd put these questions out on the table tonight, instead of the fun facts, because clearly either she was excited to not be in school, or if these were the questions that she had for her teacher for today, they were quite interesting. Okay. And so I'm hoping that you all could help me out with the answers. You know, so we can give her an answer when I see her, because probably we're going to have to do a follow-up, okay? So, you know, you ready? Are you almost ready?
I'm good. I see you do what you're going to do. Focus.
Focus. Okay. Here we go. So those of you out there, you know, and dropping my little one off to where she needed, she confirmed that, you know, there was no school and she was on her way to her favorite person's house. She said, hey, Mama, does Santa Claus have cousins? So you're driving. Wait, what? You know, that was kind of a double take to make sure I was hearing correctly. And she was like, yeah, you know, does Santa Claus have cousins? And I did not have an answer, great people, because I honestly don't know if Santa Claus has cousins, right? So in her other question, you know, because Santa Claus, like, she feel like this is a gift not being in school. She said, I know he has a wife, but does he have a mama? I'm glad you think so. So what would your answer be, great people? Like first, does Santa Claus have cousins? And does he have a mother? Can we? Now see. Beyonce put the number. Welcome, y'all. Now I see some comments here.
It's a shame somebody outside the show got to give you the number, though. We won't talk about
y'all
that part.
Are amazing.
We won't talk about that part.
Don't do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
You can see it now, right? So I'm going to go ahead and thank the great people. Thank you, Felicia. She said she got me 6 roll for $10. You know what? Okay, I got you.
6 rolls for $10.
So that was her question. Her question on in the car, you know, did Santa Claus have cousins,
mm-hmm.
and does he have a mother? And I just kind of left it. So I was just like, wow. I don't even know which direction to go in with that conversation.
Does Santa Claus have cousins?
Does Santa Claus have cousins and mother?
This was your child.
It's my child.
That asked you this question.
Who I don't have anything with Santa Claus in my home.
How old is she?
6.
And you are a licensed therapist.
Don't do that. That's not in the thing. Not in the child that wants to know the family history of Santa Claus.
Well, he wasn't born in a manger.
What's up, cousin? How are you?
I'm not sure what answer you're not asking.
You're
me.
Not helping.
Of course,
right
Santa
now.
Claus had cousins.
You know what the next question is then?
What's that?
What are they named? Where do they live? I don't want to open the door to
first where... cousin Claus, second cousin Claus,
second.
Third cousin Claus, Claw. Victor Claus, Elmer Claus, Claus Jr., Santa Claus the Third. Well, you know what? Wasn't their last name Kringle, though?
Huh?
What's his name Kringle?
I don't get it.
I'm just saying it was Kris Kringle, right?
Kris
Kringle. Kringles is a bunch of them. I saw them in the store. I was in the store earlier.
Oh
they come
God.
In the, it's in the can.
See,
they come
see.
In sour cream and cheddar.
Really?
Oh, wait.
Really?
Oh, that's Pringles. Them
say,
they cousins,
hey,
the Kringles.
Now, did you know Pringles were not real potato chips?
I found it out.
I was devastated. I will because you know you try to be healthy and they.
I found it out when I was grown. When I found out Pringles wasn't real.
That sounds like me. That sounds just like me. Right.
Shante said, wait a minute, doctor, I'm not outside the show. See, Felicia, I've been demoted again. What? Well, no, I'm just saying. Shante, ooh, don't stop. But I'm saying, number up there because the people who work at the show, i.e. the host, don't get mad at me.
Well, if there was a sign on the table
that clearly
shows the number.
If there was a sign on the table,
yes,
say that louder. If there was a what? Say it loud.
When you write up the sign for me, then I can display it and say it weekly, all right? All right? So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Okay, so if my tools were here, you know, your penmanship is questionable.
Live on air. Don't make me. We can go all in tonight. You know what? Technically, you got keys. I can.
Don't Trying to, you know, see how we can go about discussing it.
On the phone ringing.
In terms of how do we have a discussion about things that offend people with mental health issues and mental illness, right? So, obviously some people are intentional, some people are unintentional, but I think in what's going on today, you know, certain things we can be more conscious of, right? Are talking to people. And a lot of people you don't even know that may be experiencing mental health issues or illnesses because we just don't walk around, you know,
mm-hmm.
promoting or disclosing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you say could truly make a difference in how they manage and or respond to what they're feeling at the moment. So I want to throw some phrases out there. And feel free to share some other phrases that you feel like offends people who are experiencing mental health issues. looking at that and what we can do. All right, so here is phrase number one. Welcome you just coming on in. You're listening live to the Healthy Soul Talk Show. We're about to jump right into what never to say to someone with a mental health issue or illness. The first thing is, the phrase, stop acting crazy. All right? Now, obviously, you're not supposed to, you shouldn't say this to people who appear to be in a crisis or an erratic state or irrational state, meaning they're experiencing some emotional issues, right? So stop acting crazy. Right. And along with that can be, when you tell a person they're seriously unstable right now. So when you think about that, you say, well, what's the harm in telling someone they're unstable and they have a mental illness, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's very offensive, okay? When you think about it, it's almost like if this person is going through an emotional period in their life and it's due to an illness or something that is external, such as trauma.
Mm-hmm.
When you call them crazy or you use words like unstable, it's almost like you're trivializing, right? It's almost like you're taunting them at the moment when they're being faced with a serious condition at that time.
Okay.
So think about at that moment,
okay?
Right, when you tell someone, you know, you're really acting unstable right now, or you're really acting crazy,
mm-hmm.
that could position them to really become more intense. Right, with their emotional instability. Right, so how do you view that term when they really display some emotion?
What, crazy?
Yes,
I stopped saying crazy. I think after our first when we first sat down with you when we were trying to plan out your show.
Okay.
Because you told us to stop. You told me rather to stop saying crazy, but you told me I could say special. And I went with that. So I don't call people crazy no more. Per your expertise. See?
Okay, but what did you get from that? So Felicia said, did you take your medicine today? Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to say that either.
Think about the phrase, though. So you know, and that's kind of this perception that people have with, okay, if you're on psychotropic medication, or you've been diagnosed with, you know, some manic episodes, or, you know, you've experienced hallucinations, and people know this, it's almost like you're making fun of them going through that moment or experiencing a mental health issue or a crisis, you use a street term which belittles them.
Meaning, did you take your meditation yet as a street term?
Saying it while I'm in a crisis is a criticism and an insult.
Okay.
Right. Because
okay.
In essence, you're either saying that the medication is not working because, you know, I am regulated and this is how I am under my medication and I'm still not right. So it's your motive behind the reason you're saying it. If you're asking me, you know, did I take my happy pills, which you're going to talk about in a moment. So you're suggesting that I don't look right. You know what? See, y'all don't know what I threw up in. I try to be serious and really, this is why we do this show, because my producer just goes through.
What if I said?
My cousin says, what about when you say not in your right state of mind? You know,
said, check your level.
Do we really go that far? Do we just say, man, you're tripping? Check. Y'all.
Is that's a bad term, too? We can't say that either?
It's the motive behind it. All right, so listen. If you're genuinely invested, right, in showing a concern for the person when you make these statements, what is your plan to help them?
Oh, okay.
Right, so if you're not going to assist them through the moment or assist them through the crisis,
mm-hmm.
then you're taunting them.
Okay.
Right? That's okay. Not very much compassion or empathy if you don't have a plan to walk them through what you say is done about them.
So that was the first one. What was the first one again? Don't
stop acting crazy, right? You're seriously unstable,
okay.
Right? Stop acting insane. All those phrases where you see a clear difference in the person's behaviors, which we know with sometimes bipolar disorder, even anxiety of coping. And so, you know, we think about how are we helping the person, right? How are you helping the person throwing out those statements that hit the most vulnerable part? What? I just don't understand.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
Okay. Stop it.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay, stop it.
She gave me the mama stop it. She gave me
Here's the next phrase.
Okay.
All right, here we go. So stop acting crazy, right? That's offensive. Felicia says most people use that to deflect. Yeah, from confrontation, a person may be very honest about what they're... You know what? And I get that, Felicia, and it's like, what do you do right in that moment? And that's why a lot more education is needed on, you know, how would you handle a person who is acting irrational, right? Who appears to be, you know, not in tune with reality. That's a tough one, right? Because that's a whole nother level of patience that you need.
What if I say, leave me alone because I didn't take my medicine yet?
Just as offensive. That's offensive to people with mental health issues.
But I'm trying to save your life.
But that's
I didn't take my medication. Best leave me alone.
In other words, you're saying
yes.
That you are mentally disturbed and that mentally disturbed people
yes.
are violent. Right? So that's just as offensive
uh-huh.
when you say that yourself, and that's the other side to this platform here is that
yes.
that's what not to say to people who are mentally ill or have mental health issues. But what about those terms we use loosely that offends?
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
People with mental. So you saying I didn't take my medication today, and you don't have medication is really saying okay because you know. This is what mentally ill people do, and I'm going to have a reason
what
to
if
clown.
I actually do need medication?
And you haven't got yourself evaluated, then you shouldn't be saying that.
What if there is no medication for me?
Then you have a personality disorder. Then you need to stay in the house and don't come out. Really? Really? Anyway, exactly. Chiota says, Once I say you tripping, now go ahead on. I am done talking. All right. Okay. So the next one here, we say just don't worry about it. Right? Or calm down. Don't sweat the small stuff. Now, if you've ever been through an anxiety, we talked about anxiety attack last week. Mm-hmm. And we also talked about panic attacks and, you know, when something happens to you and you're having a emotional reaction to it, mm-hmm. and you go confide in somebody because that thing is really bothering you, and they say, just don't worry about it, calm down, don't sweat the small stuff. That can be looked at as an insult in itself, right? Because how do you tell someone who has an anxiety disorder or dealing with bouts of depression, right, to don't worry about it or don't sweat the small stuff? And it's kind of like how we judge people and see their lives, right? So it's like that person who's been depressed for years, and you're trying to figure out why they are depressed. Like, what in your life is so, you know, impactful that you are, you know, hanging on to depression, right? So the quickest thing you say is, just don't worry about it, move on, don't sweat the small stuff. That does not put them in a better space.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because, you know, you ever heard someone say, you don't know what it's like, or you don't know how I feel because, right, this is how it impacted me. One of the things we have to be conscious of right now is how people are emotionally responding to issues in our community and the world right now. And minimizing it is a way of saying, don't sweat it.
Okay.
Right? Or stop worrying about it, because to them, they see a bigger issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not helping to just, you know, chill out, okay? So that's kind of where I am with it, is understanding that that could be detrimental to someone who is experiencing prolonged depression and anxiety, but telling them just to get over it and move on. Right. One of the things I'm noticing today,
what's that?
Is that many people who are in relationships for, you know, let's just say over 2 years, and they're really putting a lot of time and effort financially, both emotionally, and the relationships are not working out. I see more emotional backlashes that is taking time to heal. Right.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, in some of our communities, we so used to telling people, like, with a relationship that didn't work out, oh, you'll find somebody else. Right. But if I'm going through an emotional period where, you know, it's really hurting me, if I feel betrayed, if I feel like this was the one.
Okay.
How is it that you telling me that I'll find somebody else, or, you know, there are plenty of, you know,
fish.
You know, that doesn't help a person emotionally. Well, because you're minimizing my emotional state.
It kind of depends on whether or not it's like catfish or perch.
You know what? I just...
It could be like...
Oh, my God!
No. That's not what we were talking. Okay.
No.
Help the people. They know for me. Help the people.
If you need someone to have compassion and understand,
you bring them up.
Go
to J&J, get them a large catfish, all steak, extra fries, no lemon pepper. That's my idea of compassion.
That does not help them deal with the pain of losing this relationship.
Oh, I'm sorry, because when I have stomach pain, that means I'm hungry.
For the love of the person who left you.
It could be the love of the person that goes to get the food.
And didn't come back.
I don't know that person.
Right? So you know, I'm so compassionate right now for relationships that are that have dissolved and people are really hurt by them. Like, I hear the pain and I'm there with them.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships are very, very vulnerable right now in the emotional roller coasters that people are going through. And so, obviously, I've been in this thing for over you know, almost 15 years now, and I see the shift in how people are emotionally responding to breakups, and it warrants us being more conscious of how we advise people in our circle.
Okay.
Right? It could hurt a person more to tell them maybe they just weren't the one. Right? Okay. But I thought he was. Right? So are you telling me that I'm not a good judge of character, or you minimize? And
okay,
I'm
but can
out
we,
there my
we,
perception of.
Why can't we just say that, though? You suck as a judge of character. Why we can't?
During my crisis, it wouldn't be appropriate for you to tell me about my judgment.
It depends on the person, though. Some people, okay,
Not in the crisis. Not in the thick of a crisis. The last thing they
What's
need
the definition
to
of a crisis? Maybe you help me with that.
When I'm emotionally overwhelmed,
uh-huh.
right? So if I'm crying or I'm really explaining how I'm hurting, I'm giving what I feel right now, and it's evident that I'm emotionally overwhelmed, and you come behind me and say, you know what? You'll get over this real soon. Yes, sir.
See, I put my hand up that time. Wouldn't that be the equivalent of, like, you know, when people are like, hysterical, like smacking them upside the head? So instead of, like, using your hands.
Let's go with that term you just used.
Get them.
What is hysterical? Hysteria. What is
hysteria? Hysterical.
That's a very serious term.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I don't know, doctor. What is it?
So it's a term. It's a medical term, right?
Okay.
That really, where a person is basically, I don't want to say chemically imbalanced, but they're going through an episode
uh-huh.
where you know, for all practical purposes, they need time to come back to reality or calm down. So for me, expressing to you, maybe my voice is elevated,
mm-hmm.
maybe I'm in the zone of
mm-hmm.
telling you how hurt I am,
mm-hmm.
that's not hysterical. That means I can be passionate about what I'm saying, or this is the intensity
so you're not
of
having,
my pain.
So that's not a crisis then?
A crisis is not hysterical. Most times when you hear the word hysterical, it's in the hospital setting where they have to be, you know, restrained.
Okay.
Me sitting in front of you with a loud tone or very hurtful tone, and I could be using my hands, and, you know, I may even be cursing, right? That does not mean I'm hysterical. That means that I'm hurt. That means you know. She also said, Dr. Thomas, where are you finding these soft people?
Isn't that kind of what's wrong with our society today, though, is that we got too many people that's just.
How you gonna be appreciated?
I'm not. First of all, that's what we own. That's what we going there. That's what we at.
I need you to come up in here a little bit more often, because you like
don't sit over there. Party, the mic over there.
You know. No.
Don't sit over there. Make room. Don't go on over there. Go home. Let me see. Come on. Keep your head on the swivel, man. Go on over there.
Listen. Felicia says, I'm always compassionate toward women with breakups and emotions because I once was there. You have to let people say what they need to say. Most ain't looking for advice. They're looking for listening ear. They would make their own voices. You know, and you know, to both of you all, there's so much out there that dictates how quickly we should bounce back
mm-hmm.
from events that hurt us, right? So not just a bad breakup, right? It's pretty intense where you look at our reality shows or supposed reality shows, social media. I dare not say it's really overwhelming right now dealing with your emotions because there's so many platforms that are dictating
mm-hmm.
how you should respond and bounce back.
Okay.
You know, if we go back, let's see, we are in our 30s, 40s, 50s. Right? Because we go back 40 years, right? Some of these platforms we didn't have, right, in terms of dictating when we should feel, how we should feel, and what we should feel, right? And so, Yeah, it's overwhelming right now. It's overwhelming. Yes. Why do you keep raising your hand?
Someone be told I've been told I'm rude for trying to do
okay.
it. You know.
But yes, sir.
Who in their 30s in here?
I was processing our age.
I'm just saying, but I just want to know who's
you
in their 30s.
Why are you throwing cheap shots?
I ain't throwing cheap shots. I asked that question. Oh, okay.
You know you outnumbered up in here.
I'm good, but not a fan.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Listen. So, she also says, I'm just saying I'm very compassionate. I get that. Don't do pity parties. And it's one of those things where it's a lot. I listen a lot to the platforms, and sometimes all I can do is shake my head because there are a lot of people who phrase their information as if it is the golden plan of action, right? So it's very rarely now do you hear people giving advice based on how they've used it, right?
Okay.
So, and I have to say this because it's becoming more and more prevalent, even in the religious sector, there are a lot of people who they're using these social media platforms to dictate how people overcome and process all these different aspects of life. And I never really hear them share how they've used such profound methods of bounce back in their own life. And so it bothers me because when they speak, and it's just me listening as a clinician, sometimes the way they phrase things about life events and, you know, what you should do to overcome, it's really simplified. You know, they make it sound so simple. They make it sound where, hey, you know, if you're going through this in your marriage, then all you need to do is this. Or, you know, you should never, you should don't. And very rarely do they get to the nuts and bolts of the emotions that come with those events, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not, how can you tell someone, you know, when we're married and you shouldn't talk to your husband a certain way?
Mm-hmm.
Well, are you going to help me deal with my emotions of being rejected?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because
okay.
it's easy to lay out the rules of, right, relationships. It's easy to say, hey, you know, if you get hurt in a relationship, all you need to do is take some time for yourself.
Okay.
So what does take the time mean? And if it worked for you, how do you know it's going to work for me? Right. So it really, I just look at that platform where there's a lot of people on social media using religion as a platform to give advice. And I'm here to tell you that it doesn't work. Right. And I mean that in a way. And I see people, I see the followers and, you know, I see the comments sometimes and I'm just like, wow, even the comments reflect that they need, you know, a sit down, really releasing the pain that they have. And we're making it so superficial in the context for the sake of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why she don't say, you know, I say it gets complicated because instead of people going to seek the appropriate level of help, they turn to those platforms to get a quick answer, right? And so that is, it's. I'm here to tell you, like, it's an amazing journey to see how technology and we're using social media to help heal our wounds, right? And these are wounds that just pop up with technology. They've been since the beginning of time. And I think that's kind of where we say we're more sensitive now. We're more, soft, because so many platforms have an insight on, you know, where you are soft if you feel this way. You still ain't got over it yet, right? You know, this is how you talk to the next person, right? It's teaching us how not to trust. So, yeah, I get that. There's a lot. Single women, month. Absolutely, I'm challenged in my profession sometimes.
How so?
Because, you know, when I talk to people, and it's not necessarily, you know, face in my one-on-ones, but like when I'm talking to people about mental health, and they say, well, you know, You know, I was reading a meme the other day, and it said XYZ, right? And I'm just like, wow. Or, you know, I was looking at a show the other day, which, you know, various reality shows, and this is what I was listening to. You know, I was like, wow, we are competing, right? We're competing with the pop culture of mental health.
Most, I don't want to say most, I know quite a few of the preachers that are on Facebook have never taken any sort of counseling, training, or anything like that. And even those that went to those that would have went to seminary.
Okay.
15, 20 years ago, those that went to seminary 15, 20 years ago, that was not even a part of the training.
Right.
So it wasn't. So now it's mandatory. It was mandatory for me. I didn't have a choice in either the master or the doctorate degree. Neither one of them. Had to take it.
Okay.
And I'm grateful for it because it did, you know, I mean, if first of all, you have to have a certain level of empathy anyway.
Right.
And that's where it starts with. It's not more about sympathy, but it's about just being empathetic. But these people, they're going by, you know, just pray your way out of it.
Right.
That's not, first of all, that ain't even scripture in itself, so that's a problem. But you're not helping people who truly need some professional advice, and then they're not wise enough to say, you know what, this is outside of my purview of expertise, so let me go get somebody or find you someone. Let me be a resource.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of bad.
Yeah. Welcome you all who've just joined us. Elect Lady DeBerry, Miss Eula, welcome.
Pastor Washington Mama.
Pastor. Oh, hello. Kim Tony says, just spewing garbage and old wives' tales. You know, and so, you know, that's kind of where I do see a lot of memes. I see a lot of quotes, people making up stuff. And, you know, people, I just want you all to understand that people, there are some people taking you serious with what you post, right? But it's not necessarily factual, right? It doesn't help. It's like a quick Band-Aid for them, and they don't understand the work that's needed, right, that comes out of your so-called quote. And so, yeah, I just wanted to put that out there. You know, we have to monitor better, right, with social media of the simplicity of how we see people's issues, and they should be overcoming. Shionte says, here's my reality. I give all the glory to God for making it day by day, but face-to-face therapy has been an absolute help to me. If you find a great therapist, and I mean one that you gel with, right, it's an amazing process, right? Even therapists have therapists, right? You know, and we don't shun it for ourselves either. But yes, if you find one that works for you, it sets you up for a great future, right? Especially as we know, life still happens. Okay, so another quote here, when we say, and this is where I've kind of been in general conversation. And this is before people find out what my profession is. And they say therapy is for people who are weak.
I've heard that term.
Or I just don't see the point of therapy. Right? Or I believe people can just solve things on their own. You know, and so that in itself, that's the stigmatizing. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the stigmatizing of therapy. And especially in our culture, it's been really thick. Like you honestly don't know who has experienced therapy.
Okay.
Right. So if therapy worked for me, you know, and I want to share that with you, when you just outright say, you know, therapy is for weak people, that offends me, because what I thought was huge. Right. I got the courage. You know, I went through it. You know, I successfully completed. And you turn around and say I was weak because I went to therapy. And if I've been diagnosed with depression or anxiety and now I have long-term therapy, right? So are you still telling me I'm weak because I see a therapist? right? And there are many types of therapy, right? Meaning we have career counseling, we have group counseling, we have support groups, right? We have cancer support group, eating disorder support. We have this spectrum of service for people who say, I'm at my best, actually, when I have this type of support. So how then do you label me as weak?
But truth be told, it takes more courage to admit that you have an issue that you need to seek help for than it does to pretend that you're okay.
And also people go to therapy as a prevention.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So even to know that, yes, typically we say you're in counseling, obviously you've identified a presenting issue, but there are many people who go into therapy for prevention. Like, I'm here because this is happening and I just want to make sure that I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, whether they're about to go to through a divorce, whether they are about to, you know, get ready to retire, many people say, you know what, I want to get ahead of this thing. Right.
Okay.
So do we label them as weak, or do we label them as some of the strongest people we know? Because they said, I'm about to step out on this and set myself up for emotional success.
Because 9 times out of 10, it's the person who waits to the last minute. And I don't want to call them weak, but you exhaust everything else and then you decide you're going to go to therapy. And then sometimes we wait too late.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Chiante says, I used to feel that way as well until I needed it. For real. It really gets to where you have to be, quote unquote, what was that first one? Stated as acting crazy.
Oh.
To seek therapy. Right? Is that the signal? Is that the sign? Is that the, you know, versus why can't we make therapy a part of life now, right? Why can't we make therapy a part of your annual, right, check-in with a doctor, right? Why can't therapy just be something where you say, there's a lot going on in the world right now, and I just want to make sure, right, that I'm supported in every way.
I would think this time and age that I know you said you had to cancel some stuff. I would think people would be knocking your door down right now.
So people are
panicky and panic and anxiety. We talked about that last week.
Yeah, but they have to make it to the office. So that my telehealth requests have increased.
Oh, they have.
It's finding the time because they have to be in a secure,
in a private area where they can speak.
So even that's kind of hard, but people, you know, I'm talking about this now because, what?
Is it a charge for telehealth?
Yes, it is. I have to sit there and do the same
I'm just
thing.
Asking a question. I just wanted to know,
free?
Is it, you know, it's, no, I ain't saying free. Like, I ain't saying free 99. I'm just saying, you know, I just wanted to know, like, you know, since I ain't really in there, like
you know what?
Is it half off?
I encourage you to go get there.
$59.99 for the left brain.
So can I challenge my producer to go seek therapy? Welcome, Dr. Charles. We're talking about phrases people use or how we offend people with mental health issues. I just challenged my producer. You know him too as well. we're gonna encourage him to go seek some therapy for prevention measures. All
so
right?
How does that go, though? Help me with that. So I'm going to therapy. So I'm walking to therapist. Hey, how you doing? Why are you here? I don't know.
When you make the phone call, you're going to say, hey, you know, I just want to do some check-ins.
Some check-ins.
You know, see what therapy is, and let me make the appointment.
Uh-huh.
And a good therapist would know where to take it from there when you come in and sit down.
Okay. Okay.
Now, as long as you're open and honest,
okay,
right, and don't have a wall up,
I'm coming in,
and you answer those questions in dialogue with them, you should be fine. And Dr. Charles says it's long overdue. I agree.
Dr. Brown, really? That's where we at? That's
hey,
where we at?
Hey, Peter, how are you?
I thought the brother together. That's where we at, huh? Okay. All right.
See, how can you
the next time
that
you
from
come
a community
to the studio?
Psychologist who promotes therapy.
Say that again. Say what?
He's a community. He promotes therapy. So everybody can use a little therapy today.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I look forward to you hearing about your experience.
I actually do have a therapist though.
So this is a phrase that would offend someone. Have you seen them lately?
Have I seen my therapist lately?
Yes.
No, I have not visited the therapist lately, but it is time that I go back and see him. It's been a while.
Oh my God.
Huh? His name is Dr.
You know what? You are taking too long.
I was going to say the name. Y'all laughing at me. I'm trying to be serious right now.
Lordy. Anyway.
His name is Dr. U. Julio.
Okay. So, as we move on to Elder Dr.
Dana
King, who has not seen his therapist in some time.
It has been some time.
He forgot his name.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. So, yes. Don't. So, be mindful of how you use therapy, right, as a means of insulting someone.
Okay.
You know, Dr. Dana, why did your volume increase when you said that? Right? You should see him in the studio.
What I do?
Don't be shy.
What?
Don't be shy.
Let me talk to the mic. Let me say it quick. My doctor, can you all hear me? Hear me? Let me hear myself.
We ruffled some feathers. He's trying to make
okay,
sure.
I can hear myself real good. My doctor's name is Dr. Uncle Julio.
Dr. Uncle Julio, which probably if we look up his license, doesn't exist.
Oh, he has a license. Yeah, he's all over the country.
You don't call your...
He's all over the country.
Really?
He is. He has several locations.
Okay.
And you can go there. I mean, he has suburban locations. City locations.
Do you meet him at Benny's?
No, I never meet him at Benny's.
Where
he has his own place. You don't have to go to no Benny's. No, this ain't no bootleg doctor where you go to the Benny's.
How much is the rate for?
It depends because sometimes you go for, 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes you're there for 2-3 hours. And you know how that rate goes. You got your rates. It's charged. You have how do you start your rate? They're like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Sometimes I've been there. I mean, one time I went and saw the doctor. I was there for about 5.5 hours.
Y'all can see him up in here right now.
I was there for 5.5 hours because it was that serious. And then he does group counseling.
Were you staggering when you left him?
No, not at all. I drove
were you,
by. Like
were you
in.
Able to drive when you got to?
Absolutely.
With Don
I felt
Julio.
Better when I left, though. I always feel better when I leave Dr. Julio.
Okay.
I feel better all the time.
Do you feel like a little hangover?
Not at all. Because he uses good medicine. See? Dr. Brown say he's one of his favorite medicine. Come on back home, Dr. Brown. Come on.
Anyway.
I feel much better when I leave. That's why I'm overdue. That's why I'm thinking I need to set an appointment.
Okay.
We pull up. He got his own app and everything.
Really? Anyway.
So
let's promote therapy as a proactive measure. All right? A proactive measure. All right. Here's the next thing. Miss Yula, you're right. Whole voice change. Whole voice. Like... All right, next one here. The next one says, you see someone going through something, right? They look a little sad, or they disclose to you that they've been battling, right? This thing called depression, anxiety, panic, all that stuff we've been talking about. And you say things will get better in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow's another day. Cheer up. Don't you think if they could do all that, they would?
Okay. If they could do it on their own?
If they could do it on their own, or if it was that easy to snap out of it, right? Or things will get better in the morning, which suggests what? When you wake up tomorrow, right, things will be better. And it's, things will not be better because I'm still dealing with that issue. It's a matter of my emotions that I'm trying to regulate. And although you mean this, like, I don't think people, when they say it, they're trying to you know, be mean to them or, you know, not paying attention or you know, trying to make them feel better. But you know, telling them that tomorrow's another day or cheer up, things will get better. Telling that to a person with major depression or anxiety disorder, it's like a slap in the face, right? Because there's a chemical, right? We're regulated by chemicals. Remember, we talked about those, the dopamine, serotonin, all these chemicals that regulate us, and you say things will get better in the morning, right? That's not the case. And it does not make them feel emotionally better when you just say it's that easy, right, to cheer up.
So when I'm a non-trained minister who decides to give out some therapy and somebody's going through it, I just come with my weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning.
That is
you know, one of the things I've learned over the years in doing mental health and spiritual implementation,
yes,
is really understanding that people desire that. People desire to live by the Bible, experience the Bible, the promises of God.
Yes.
But there's a natural side to us.
Absolutely.
That says, okay, I'm reading this, I absorb it, and I understand it, but my body is still, right, responding in a certain way. So how do I get my natural to line up with my spiritual, right? And so I think that the hope for people when they're telling these individuals, hey, you know, cheer up, go to bed, you know, give it to God, let, you know, don't worry about it, or if you're going to worry about it, don't go to God. My body needs to line up. My body needs to line up, right, with what I'm saying, you know. So that can actually, when you tell people things to get better, that's not really being conscious of where they are at that moment.
So Bobby, Dr. Bobby is saying it wrong.
Don't worry, be happy, right? That's just a Band-Aid, right? Absolutely not. You know what, Shiontae, that put in the work. Some people are looking for, what is that work? You know what I'm saying? So you're absolutely right. It's like, how do we join forces more to let people know, hey, you got to fight this thing, right? Hey, you have to get support. You have to get someone to anchor you up until you can grab this thing by the horns yourself, you know, and fight off these symptoms. But I think that's what's missing, right? Mm-hmm. When we tell people, you know, hey, it'll be better, that literally doesn't mean when you go to bed tonight, then when you wake up, you're going to be happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does not work like that.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So
no, it does.
Morning could be 6 months from now when you say, okay, I've put in the work. Now I see the sunshine. Now,
yeah, because some people's nighttime is more than 24 hours.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I get that.
Right. So thinking about that, right,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's be mindful. Those who we know are struggling with mental health issues,
mm-hmm.
right, that frequent phrase of, you know, tomorrow's another day or cheer up, that's not helping their mental stability.
So don't sing, the sun will come out tomorrow.
Is that what you say to people when they...
Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow.
I just don't know what to say right now.
There'll be sun.
What?
Just thinking about. Let me gospelify. Tomorrow.
Why? Oh my
no?
God.
Okay.
What is. Okay. All right. Here we go. We're going to keep moving. Lord. All right. People who go through crisis. you racking up the comments here. Miss Kim says, I hate when people say lean into it as if you are resisting the inevitable. I don't think depression, grief, and despair is a normal state. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Shianta says, I can't stand him. She can't stand you. You on the road
tonight.
What'd
she say? I hate when people say lean into it. Oh, so don't lean with it, rock with it.
So let's get back focused. Someone who is experiencing mental health issues, don't ask them, don't you want to get better? Do you want to get better? Right? You know, it takes a lot of courage for people to go to therapy. It takes a lot of people to be compliant with their psychotropic medication. And many people struggle with taking multiple types of psychotropic medication. They have side effects and then the stigma that comes along with it. Right? That question of do you want to get better? That's insulting and that's belittling, but that's minimizing how I feel about what I'm trying to get over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it could actually be hurtful because it implies that I'm not trying hard enough, right? Or for the simple fact, I just don't want to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that, you know, if you have family members who have experienced mental health issues or disorders and you see how it really bothered them emotionally, some of us understand more than others because we've sat with people, right, who experiences these things. And, you know, that question of do you want to get better? Of course they want to get better. But do you know how hard it is when you say, I'm trying. And because you hear something where I'm not working as hard as you think I should be working, then you state to me that question, right? Shianta says, why not ask? Jesus asked the lame man in chapter 5. So in essence, if they're not looking like they're getting help, but people who do get help or do go through counseling, they're on psychotropic medications and they're discouraged because of the side effects. Or sometimes counseling can be a long process, especially if they're working through trauma and they feel discouraged, right? And they're expressing that, a question back to them, you know, it kind of takes away from how they're feeling at that moment emotionally. Because mm-hmm. it's not really a question about whether or not they want to get better. They need some motivation. They need an anchor, right, to know that they can do this. You can keep going. Not questioning, right, whether or not they want to stay in the state that they're in, right? So it's just something to think about when you have people who are dealing with those mental health issues and emotions. It's almost like don't assume they don't want to get better just because they're telling you, right, they're feeling discouraged or having a hard time. Have you ever had somebody tell you, like, they really don't know how long they can keep doing this whole, you know, medication thing? Or
I've never had that conversation with anybody about medication. I've had that conversation in ministry, though, where people go, you know, when we used to do our street ministry on the west side, and it was always heartbreaking when you'd have a young person, probably wasn't even 18 years old, would come up to you and say, man, can you just pray for me? Because I don't know how long I'm going to make it out of here.
Right.
So that's the only thing I have to, that would be my equivalent to your question.
It is because... Yeah. How do you tell the young people to even them go seek help for the trauma that they've lived
and they live in trauma? I applaud them for, because we don't seek, we stand out there to be a help. But the fact that, you know, he rolled up to us on a bike and said, hey, can y'all pray for me? That was him seeking help.
Right.
The problem, you know, we did what he asked us for. And we offered him a chance to come and, you know, sit and talk with us. The mental aspect, no, you know, that was not, again, that's where you have to have the partnership with spiritual and professional.
Right.
You know, so that's why those partnerships are absolutely necessary.
Right. And it's hard, right? When you ask people to, how do you ask someone to cope in the environment they're in and also prepare to change their future?
Mm-hmm.
That is the toughest thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're not going home with you,
right?
You're not going to be there, you know, whenever you feel at this point, call me. You're not going to be, you know, in the role of a sponsor, right? So it's really like, okay, you know, let's think about when we say that, right? Or the expectation is, it's not easy for everybody to just snap out of a certain mental space when they live in a physical space that contributes to that emotional roller coaster, right? So yeah. So Felicia says sometimes you have to give a logical answer before a spiritual one. Yeah, and it's really welcome everyone. Lestat, what's going on? Is that Audrea McGee? Thank you for joining us. It's really thinking about it and just being more understanding, right? When people are in these state of mind, let's not assume, right, that they don't want to help themselves. Let's not assume, right, that they are, you know, not investing in mental wealth. Here is in Will's story, you can snap out of it. Everyone feels this way sometimes. Right? You can snap out of it. Everyone feels this way sometimes.
Thanos.
Did you just say?
I believe in the Thanos spirit.
Oh my God! What is wrong?
That's how we act now. You feel like brand new because you said you do like Thanos spirit.
What? Dr. Dana King has he's being chastised right now. Nope. Finish, please. Yes.
Wakanda forever.
Oh my God. Oh, it says, oh wait, what we got going on here? So it says here, Felicia Howdy. Okay, what are we doing here? Dr. Thomas, is there a clinical term for the woe is me person? Dr. Charles says most people address mental issues from a clouded or formed perspective. They are viewing the issues from the perspective of the mentally ill or mentally healthy individual, but I can't see through their eyes. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that you know, when we talk about the compassion and the empathy, I always like self-awareness, right? You know, yes, there are some of us who have not experienced those moderate to severe symptoms of mental illness or you know, such depression we can get out of it. And I think that's where, you know, we could be more open to as Dr. Brown says, you know, not necessarily looking through you're mentally healthy right now. Right. And sometimes, you know, I challenge people who give the persona that nothing's ever wrong with them. Right. And those people who, you know, when you see them and you're confiding in them, they always have the answers. Right. They always have the answers and nothing's ever wrong. And, you know, it's really something, you know, when you talk to this easy and concern is something that you struggle with. Yes. And you know, that's the tough part about it is in my profession, in our profession, we're not created to give advice, right? We're not considered experts over your problem in your life. We're there to provide a platform, right, to help you discover what your change is or what environment you need to take a look at, right? Whether that's internally or externally and explore, you know, how you would regulate your emotions. So I think that's kind of the challenge as well. When you think about all this stuff, we say to people who are going through stuff, we don't give people advice, right? And you know, how can I tell you how to live your life and deal with your trauma? And I've never experienced. I empathize. I can say, hey, you know, although I've experienced something similar to that, I can never say I know how you feel. This is what you should do. Right. If you had a group of mothers who lost their children, mm-hmm. right? They may have lost them to gun violence, right? But they all won't say, hey, this is exactly how I feel at this moment all the time. You will hear different, right, mm-hmm. different emotional states, different reactions, because those were their children. They lived with them. So we have to be careful, right, with saying, I just do this, mm-hmm. right? Or because, you know, I've never experienced this, then I know that, you know, life can be great. Does that make sense? So people who've never been addicted to drugs, right, you know, you can't really tell somebody, hey, you know, it's easy to get addiction.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know? Right? But sometimes we minimize it. Oh, you really wanted to stop, you will stop.
Well, you know, I used to be a kid, too. I mean, you know.
Really?
That's what you, oh.
But that's our profession. Our profession is to support those who need help. And that's our challenge today is a lot of people proclaim to be experts over people's problems. And so here is the advice game, right? And so doing drugs is one of those things. You know, don't tell people to stop smoking weed if you're not ready to help deal with the anxiety they experience. I just don't understand, you know, that we don't even need a camera on you because you know, your sound effects just give you away all the time.
Well, I'm trying to help the people experience. I'm trying to put myself, you know, the pastor should smell like his sheep. That is.
The pastor.
The shepherd ought to smell like his sheep. If they smoking crack, I'm gonna smoke crack too.
Oh my God! I just don't understand. What is wrong? Why did you just say this?
Okay, go ahead.
Dr. Brown, help him out now. Help him out.
What happened?
Anyway, all right, here we go. So last point. Someone who is experiencing mental health issues, such as, you know, a bad breakup, you know, a traumatic event happened maybe a couple years ago and they're still dealing with it. To those who, you know, are really dealing with grief, disappointment, and we say, stop focusing on bad stuff and just start living.
Mm.
Right? When you think about these things, you know, to tell a person to focus in on themselves, because essentially I'm confronting you, letting you know that I'm in a bad place. This is why I'm in a bad space. I continue to feel this way. I wish, you know, things would change. And I'm really pouring my heart out to you. And you say, stop focusing on the bad stuff.
Mm.
So what do I do with myself then? If it's my past, right, or if it's something that I'm trying to recover from, how do I stop focusing on the bad stuff and just start living when that which hurt me the most hasn't been resolved?
Mm. Okay.
Right. And so these are things we're accustomed to, right? When we think about encouraging people and, you know, really trying to be a person's cheerleader, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, let's just be more mindful of when we're putting stuff in the atmosphere and giving people support, right? A lot of times we could just say, we tend to say stop, right? Stop doing this, stop doing that. Well, if you was just stop. Well, but I'm trying to be in tune with myself, right? I'm trying to express to you what I need, and you're telling me to just stop.
Mm-hmm.
Then what is there left for me to do, right? And am I not living right now? When you tell me to just start living, what exactly are you telling me? What life do you feel like I should start living?
Mm-hmm.
and stop focusing on the bad stuff.
Stop. Okay.
What life do I start living?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If you
that
stop
excludes
focusing on the bad stuff.
To stop focusing on the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Because either you're telling me to sweep it under the rug, or it's not that serious, right? What I've been through, it ain't, you know. What are you telling me?
I remember, and I don't know if this equates to this because it was television, but I remember watching a episode of Law and Order.
Okay.
And it was a patient who had some mental issues, and he refused to take his medicine. He didn't want to take the medicine because he liked the voices.
Okay.
And they
right.
made him take the medicine so that he could testify. And once the voice stopped, life was not normal to him.
Right.
And he killed himself.
Yes.
So I'm like, wow. And it was like, of course, it was television, but the story behind it was
mm-hmm.
people get used to their dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And when you tell them to stop it, then what exactly am I supposed to do after I stop it? Because I've been living this way for so long.
And I'll add another layer to that. Sometimes people are subjected to severe mental illnesses like that because of some traumatic event that's happened to them. So some sexual abuse survivors
mm-hmm.
created that sense of reality,
mm-hmm.
right? When you talk about hallucinations, hearing voices,
mm-hmm.
that was their way of coping with dealing with the violations,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you say, okay, I'm going to give you medication to minimize or alleviate these symptoms here. Now those memories coming back from my trauma,
mm.
right? But if I have not disclosed that to you, or if I'm not ready,
mm-hmm.
right, to process those traumas, then that's the state of mind that you know, we could be put in, suicidal ideation, suicide attempts, because when you heal my physical symptoms,
mm-hmm.
that thing that hurt me the most, or those that world that I have shut out, suppressed for so many years or so much time, is coming back,
mm-hmm.
right? But if we put out there, hey, just take this pill, or don't you want to? It's not that easy, right? Because so a lot of times you're telling people, okay, deal with your stuff, right? Or go see a doctor, a psychiatrist, but not with the intention of dealing with the hurt.
Mm.
Right, dealing with the external stuff that contributed to their mental conditions. You know what I'm saying? It's really, you know, it's one of those things that I wish we could talk about more.
Mm-hmm.
When you saying this type of stuff to people, do you really understand the magnitude, right,
mm-hmm.
of past hurt memories, unresolved issues that surface?
Mm-hmm.
Right. When you tell people to just move on with their life, or you tell people, OK, well, it'll be better tomorrow. No, it won't be until I get the appropriate help I need to process what the heck just happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's hard sometimes for people when, you know, because I deal with sexual abuse survivors,
mm-hmm.
And sexual assault survivors. The memories never go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what age it was, as long as I remember it happening, and
right.
I may not remember every single account or all the details, but that which I do remember, it never goes away. So I have to live. I have to find a way to live
mm-hmm.
the best quality of life with the memories of my trauma.
Mm.
And unless you're ready to help me with that,
right.
Don't tell me to stop focusing on the bad
to
stuff.
To move on. Yeah. Because this has become a part of me.
Correct.
Got it.
This is how I protected myself.
Right.
And if I really, you know, one of the things I have to hold my peace a lot on my personal side, you know, when I'm out, you know, listening to people talk, because you know, you hear about violations that happen in people's childhoods and they minimize it so much. But do you understand that a person, particularly women who are sexually violated in childhood, have a hard time having healthy sexual relationships as an adult? Meaning that I can get married
mm-hmm.
and if my husband approaches me
mm-hmm.
the way my violator did,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have an issue because now you remind me of my violator. You are doing things
right.
for that which I said that's a place that I never wanted to go back to. And you spontaneously walking up on me
right.
while I'm asleep puts me in a place of where I was violated.
Or it could be the exact opposite, and it turns you into something else because you were taught that that's who you need to be.
And that happens a lot
that's
with
the other
with,
side. Yeah.
when you before that's the before you get married,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And you know that you know it's so much to this whole thing when you say just you know you should be over that by now. You know most survivors of sexual assault some of them go through a period where it is what it is. They have these sexual experiences and they never experience pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what's different? Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing because my body responded this way
mm-hmm.
when this
mm-hmm.
was happening. So this is the only way I keep attention. This is the only way I feel. And they never achieve, right,
mm-hmm.
healthy sexual practices. Hence, now they're trying to figure out, why can I be in healthy relationships?
Mm.
Right. And mm-hmm. and so it's just, we hear it more now because it is one of those things where we could look at a young lady and say, you know, why are you promiscuous? Right. Why are you all
right.
out there? But until you sat down and said, explain to her or listen to her.
Right.
Right. Say, hey, you know, when I was 12 years old, this is what was happening to me.
Right.
So this is what I'm used to.
So I mastered it.
Correct. Or
right.
my body responds.
Right.
Or, you know, it's like a baby born with drugs in their system,
yes.
right? They come out already with a certain level of
yes.
tolerance, and they even
yes.
go through withdrawal.
Yes.
So how then you say when you abuse someone,
yes.
that goes with physically, mentally, verbally, I need to keep doing it because that's kind of become a part of who I am, but I'm unhappy with that, and it doesn't make me feel good now,
mm-hmm.
right? So those are the layers that sometimes you have to uncover before you tell a person, right, to change their attitude about their circumstance. All right, so that's kind of where I wanted to go tonight was to talk about during this time of vulnerability as a country,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's be mindful of the things we're putting in the atmosphere that can hinder a person's motivation for getting therapy, that can hinder a person's motivation for confiding in you, that they're really not okay right now, right? Without you saying, you know, don't worry about it, things will get better.
Mm.
Right? Mm. No, I don't see it. So do you have the patience? My challenge to you all, do you have the patience to give time to someone who disclosed that they're not in a good place? And if you don't have the time or the patience, what would your next response be? Would you suggest that they go seek help without saying that they're weak?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Would you say, okay, call me at this time and we can, you know, I can listen to you because we're not putting you in an advice position, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will you be available to point that person in a direction that does not minimize the state of despair or emotional distress that they're in? That's my challenge to you.
Okay.
All right. So, Mr. Produce.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. That's my challenge to you. And I want to check in next week of how you've supported those who have confided in you that they are feeling emotionally overwhelmed and or need some support. So you all up on here, you know, do who know Dr. Dana L. King personally,
don't,
right?
Don't.
Let's do a test run and see,
what?
You know, if he has what it takes, right? Because he said he was going to see his doctor, Uncle Julio. So he should be well prepared.
I have to make an appointment.
Right? We'll make it soon.
The problem is, I can't get. He's not. Yeah, he's gonna be. He's. Yeah, and it doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't do house calls.
That's fine.
Yeah, but all of his locations are kind of on hiatus right now because of the government stuff that's going on.
Oh, you can't dine in.
I'm just saying you can't go in there and sit and talk.
Yep, Miss Kim, he has homework, so I need you all to inbox.
Well, what you could do, though, is I'm thinking
Elder
because
King.
Your clientele is a little short right now because of the stuff that's going on, I'm thinking we come up with a barter system. Because I know somebody.
Really?
Who got some toilet paper. So I'm thinking if I bring you like 4 or 5 rolls, that ought to get me about how many minutes worth of what you think? Come on, carry the 2. Come on, carry the 2. How many rolls? For how many rolls? For 4 rolls. For 4 rolls. 1 hour roll. That's like 4 sessions.
Wait a minute.
Dad, that's why you don't produce. That's why you handle the money round.
You know what? Really? Really?
What if it's the 2-ply?
2? Really? 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 Those of you tuning in, I was disclosing that, you know, I've lost some contracts due to this pandemic. You know, I wasn't able to stock up on toilet tissue like some of you all were. And so if I needed some toilet paper real soon because I was not one of those ones who went out and hoarded, you know, but you know, I don't know, you know. So will you be available to give me a roll of toilet or
full
some
pack.
Meat?
Full pack.
Right? So, because
I can't help you on the meat tip. But the full pack, I can get you a carry-on. I can give you a bundle pack. That ought to give me a month worth of service. Right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I think that ought to be because you know it is the you know we at the right at the edge of the apocalypse. So I figure if you know, this is when people start bartering for stuff. That's what they did on the what you call it on the walker. They bartered. Look, we got this. We trade you this for this. So I'm thinking I can get about a month worth of counseling.
I get who,
for the 3-ply. What about the 3-ply?
Listen, first of all,
huh? The 3-ply.
You mean therapy for yourself?
I'm just saying. Period.
Yeah.
The 2-ply, not the 3-ply.
Oh my goodness! Listen.
I mean, I'm trying to stop.
Yes, you all seriously pray for those who, you know, it wasn't just the restaurants, right? So the restaurants are getting hit, but those of us who work with the public, mass, you know, groups of people who had contracts, whether they were with the county, the schools, you know, some of the schools we worked with, we did have contracts to do these services in. Of course, when they closed down, there goes the postponing of the contract. So, you know, I think that, you know, for me, it's not the virus itself, it's the backlash that, you know, the precautions we're taking. So a lot of livelihood, you know, elements are on the table here. And so, you know, I just ask you all to pray. Of course, you know, I'm a believer, right? And I know, you know, we're joking now, but it's definitely one of those things where you have to stay okay, right? And know that things will work out, as Shionte said earlier, putting in the work, right? So, yes, I do understand, you know, these contracts that are postponed. To put on hold indefinitely is going to warrant me with doing a different marketing strategy, which, you know, we're at the table now, right? But your prayers mean much for the strength, right? Because that means that I have to work a little bit harder, you know, for that. And so you just keep praying. Keep praying my strength, my voice. You know, I talk for a living, right? So you know, it's one of those things where my voice makes the money. And so I do need your prayers and your strength for that. All right, great people. So we're going to get ready to get up out of here. See you all next week.
And everybody should know.
Have a great one. Don't forget to hit the inbox of Dana King with your issues. We out.
Oh, I got